Topic 15, Practicing Forgiveness. Jack Kornfield wrote a book called The Art of Forgiveness, Loving Kindness, and Peace. That was certainly an enticing title to read. And he has a quote in that book that I think is very important. Without forgiveness, he writes, life would be unbearable. Without forgiveness, our lives are chained, forced to carry the sufferings of the past and repeat them without release. What is forgiveness? First, allow me to say a few words about forgiveness and what it is not. Forgiveness is not forgetting. It's unrealistic, after all, to expect us to have amnesia for a hurtful event. But at the same time, it's also not rumination, where we elaborately rehearse the offense, which only tends to more deeply encode it in our memory and strengthen its potency to cause distress. So as comforting as having an audience to discuss the injury may be for us in the short term, oftentimes repeating the offense and our justification for anger or hatred is not helpful to us in the long term. Forgiveness is not necessarily reconciliation, and this is an important point. If we are desirous of an ongoing relationship with a person who has injured us, then reconciliation is, of course, appropriate, and it depends on our willingness to forgive, to let go of the grudge. On the other hand, there are some people who hurt us with whom reconciliation is not desirable or advisable. An abusive partner, for example, someone who physically abuses a spouse, is not a person that we would advise reconciliation with. Forgiveness, yes, with abundant grace, but not necessarily reconciliation. Forgiveness is not always rooted in justice. While it is easier to forgive someone who acknowledges their wrongdoing and makes reparation, forgiveness does not depend on this. Here, mercy extends beyond the demands of justice. So what is forgiveness? Psychology has been very interested in defining forgiveness and in coming up with measures of it and ways to enhance forgiveness. Michael McCullough and colleagues have defined interpersonal forgiveness as the decision to reduce negative thoughts, affect, and behavior, such as blame and anger, toward an offender or hurtful situation, and to begin to gain better understanding of the offense and the offender. Notice they emphasize it's a decision. Forgiveness as a decision to forgive usually entails certain shifts in the way we see ourselves and others. A shift, first of all, from taking something too personally. For example, she did it purposely to harm me, toward viewing the offense less personally. A second shift from blaming the offender for how you feel. He made me angry or bitter, toward taking responsibility for your own emotional experience, hurt, and anger. A shift from creating a grievance story that reflects helplessness, I was a victim, toward changing the story to emphasize your heroic choice to grow and prosper. Now, there are multiple scriptural and theological foundations of forgiveness. Forgiveness is, after all, at the core of Christianity. Most common words denoting forgiveness in the New Testament are in Greek eleao, meaning to show mercy, appears 78 times in the New Testament, or aphiemi, to release, to discharge, to put away, occurs 64 times in the New Testament. In Luke 23, verse 34, Jesus says, "Father, forgive them." And he uses that word in Greek, aphiemi. On the part of the forgiving person, it entails having compassion. Recall the story of the prodigal son, Luke 15, verse 20. The father saw him and had compassion and ran and embraced him. This is the essential element of forgiveness, the kind of empathy that the father has with the prodigal son that generates compassion, a willingness to let go of all of the hurt and pain and grudge in order to embrace the son, and in this case, to be reconciled with the son. Now, there are many benefits to the forgiving person. And again, McCullough and others in the field of psychology have done extensive research to identify these benefits. Physically, forgiveness reduces blood pressure, increases immune functioning, and by doing so, reduces disease risk. There are also a host of psychosocial benefits to forgiveness, an increase in perceived security. The world is perceived as less threatening when we forgive. We have an increase in optimistic thoughts, an increase in self-efficacy in managing my own anger, and a decrease in those affects associated with depression, like hostility, anger, anxiety, and fear. Forgiveness enhances our sense of connectedness to others, and even more importantly, our spiritual connectedness to God. On the other hand, unforgiveness is associated with heightened anxious symptoms, paranoia, narcissism, psychosomatic complications, incidences of heart disease, and a heightened vulnerability to physical illness. So, if forgiveness is so good for us, why is it so difficult? Why is it that revenge is so hard to let go of? At a recent conference, when I was talking about forgiveness, one participant offered that holding on to a grudge is like swallowing poison and waiting for the other person to die. We can so much, so frequently hold on to revenge. There are certain barriers to forgiveness. Among them is a fear that if we forgive, the transgression will be repeated. Will the perpetrators interpret forgiving responses as a free license to repeat the transgression? This problematic fear highlights the need to distinguish clearly between condoning, that's okay, minimizing, oh, it was no big deal, or justifying, well, I know you've been under a lot of stress lately, all of those kinds of responses, from real forgiving responses, which require on the part of the forgiving person a clear recognition that the offense did occur without minimizing or condoning or justifying it, and that it really did hurt me, along with a conscious decision to release the perpetrator from the debt. Another barrier to exercising forgiveness is the fear of appearing weak, especially if the one who has been hurt has a strong need to save face. This could be culturally determined. In some cultures, it's just simply sanctioned or not permitted. In other cases, it could be a function of a fragile sense of self-esteem, a personality issue. Another barrier can be a concern that justice will not be served. Retributive justice, after all, dictates an eye for an eye. Restitutional justice demands repayment in the form of apologies or other concessions. Forgiveness, on the other hand, often requires the loosening of justice standards to permit mercy. The bottom line is, those who are more oriented toward fairness than mercy are more likely to resist expressing forgiveness if they are not convinced that justice has been served. Another barrier to exercising forgiveness is the loss of the victim status. Sometimes there is a secondary gain or a reward in not forgiving. For example, the power to induce guilt in a relationship, to justify in your own mind your own counter-offenses. For example, if a spouse at one point cheated on you, was unfaithful in the relationship, you might want to hold on to that as an ace in the hole, as it were, so that you could be permitted to do some kind of hurtful behavior to that person because you have been victimized. You always have this victim status to justify your own anger and can justify your own exercise of sadism in some ways, hurtful behavior toward people who have injured you. Now, do certain personality types find it harder to extend forgiveness? Narcissistic people who are characterized by a sense of entitlement, a lack of empathy, and a hypersensitivity to injury certainly find forgiveness very difficult. They simply cannot allow themselves to let go of an injury. They will hold on to injury because their own self-esteem is too fragile to let it go. Type A personalities, those people who are high achievement-oriented people versus the more empathic type B personalities, the type A personalities are easily aggravated by others. There was a story about Frank Sinatra that said that in his work relations with other people, there were no second chances. The first time you offended or disappointed him, you were out. That's a type A response. Readily blaming others, being cynical, get out of my way if you're not always and everywhere ready to promote my agenda. There are also other personality traits that are associated with low forgiveness. For example, people who have high neuroticism scores. That is, people who are moody, who are prone to stress, hostility, anger, depression, are less likely to forgive. Or people who are low in agreeableness, the more cynical, dismissing and vengeful personalities among us. There is some mixed results with respect to religiosity and spirituality. It appears from studies conducted by McCullough and Worthington that religious and spiritual people say that they are more forgiving, but when they are presented with specific transgressions for specific circumstances, they find it just as difficult to forgive as non-believing, non-religious people. I am hoping that that result will change. It's not one that I particularly appreciate, and it is only in their series of studies, but it is something that gives us, who are committed to spiritual and religious growth, reason to pause and to think. Now, there are models to forgiveness. Among them is one which emphasizes the need to cultivate empathy for the transgressor. In order to forgive, we have to try to get into the shoes of the person who offended us. Not to say that we would do the same thing or feel the same way if we were in that person's predicament. That would be sympathy. But rather empathy, that we would be able to understand how that person might think, feel, and behave the way he or she did. This focused empathy is the only variable in the research studies that look at models to forgiveness that has been shown to facilitate forgiveness when induced experimentally. Secondly, we need to make generous attributions and appraisals about the transgression and the transgressor, giving the transgressor the benefit of the doubt. Thirdly, we need to reduce rumination about the transgression. The more we brood, the higher the levels of revenge seeking and the less likely to seek forgiveness. Fourthly, to cultivate humility. Humility predisposes us to forgive. Now, humility is not low self-regard. As we focused on the very first talk in this course on the virtues that are essential for flourishing, humility is an appropriate view of oneself, not overestimated nor underestimated, but viewing oneself as basically equal with any other human being. Even if there are objective differences in physical beauty, wealth, social skills, and intelligence, it is to have a sense of self-acceptance, an understanding of one's imperfections, to be free from arrogance and low self-regard. In other words, I need to be emotionally healthy in order to forgive. Forgiveness is about being ourselves released from the power of fear. It allows us, in the words of Cornfield, to see with kindly eyes and to rest in a wise heart. When we forgive other people, we realize that we as well are not immune from the need for the grace of God's own forgiving love. And of course, it's to the extent that we know ourselves graced with forgiveness that we are able in turn to exercise that forgiveness for others. To be a good forgiver in the name and power of Jesus, we must have an experiential grasp of being a loved sinner. This is absolutely essential. I cannot think of myself as righteous and at the same time extend forgiveness. I must know that God loves me in all of my limitation, in all of the ways that I have offended him and others. It's the reason, of course, that every Mass begins with a confession, with a need for God's healing and forgiving love, so that we can pray the prayer with genuine integrity and honesty, "Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who trespass against us." It enables us to move away from a legalistic model of forgiveness where demands are made, an eye for an eye, on the other person toward a more healing, merciful extension of forgiveness, even when the demands of justice are not satisfied. We have many opportunities when we forgive to grow, to deepen our own spiritual life. We become in touch with our common humanity under God. I too have needed others' forgiveness in the past. This deepening phase, a kind of spiritual transformation, may lead to a new meaning for ourselves. We become identified, as it were, as a forgiver, as a Christian who is a forgiver, becoming more compassionate toward others who have been sincerely hurt. This may lead to a heightened experience of universality, that no one of us is alone in the experience of suffering or being injured at the hands of others. It may also lead to a discovery of a new purpose in life. Often people are motivated to start a support group or to go to a support group in the wake of some injury that they have endured so that they can start the healing process of forgiving. All of this leads to a decrease in negative emotions. It has been described variously as a lightening or a feeling of freedom. In this process of forgiving, we experience a freedom and a power to disentangle oneself, to move ahead in life without the weight of life frozen in humiliation, in hatred and estrangement, to live with one's hurts and wounds and not be enslaved by them. This deepening phase often leads to an increase in hope. St. John of the Cross, the 16th century Carmelite mystic, wrote in the Spiritual Canticle, "Attachment to a hurt arising from a past event blocks the inflow of hope into our lives." Lewis Smedes wrote more recently in a text, "From Forgiveness to Hope," that forgiveness makes hope in reconciliation possible and creates the moral energy to pursue reconciliation. In his postlude to Forgive and Forget, Healing the Hurts We Don't Deserve, Smedes asserts that when we forgive, we reverse the flow of seemingly irreversible history. This act of forgiveness is outrageous. It's an outrage, if you will, against a strict morality that will not rest with anything short of an even score. And it is creative. We are in cooperation with God's creative, divine plan that does not create perfection, but that creates and recreates and recreates again. We join with the Lord when we exercise forgiveness. Smedes concludes, "When we forgive, we ride the crest of love's cosmic wave. We walk in stride with God, and we heal the hurt we never deserved." It's so important, isn't it, after all, as we anticipate a life of spiritual transformation and flourishing, practicing virtue, using all that psychology has to offer, our spirituality and the richness of our spiritual Christian Catholic tradition. It's so important, perhaps most important, to exercise love. Love, after all, is founded on a willingness to forgive. And so I conclude this series with forgiveness, as a way to motivate us to move forward, to find God's love, to share it abundantly, and so to grow in truth and in holiness.
Thank you for listening to this program by Now You Know Media. Please visit our website, nowyouknowmedia.com, today to browse our newest programs.